Thanks, everyone. Today we're going to be talking about mobile application development and informatics for rapid data collection. And the motivation for this is that for a long time, for the last few decades, random digit dialing has been the widely used across survey research. But the last few years has been a little problematic because there's more and more people just have cell phones. And the problem with this is that the number of people that actually, today, almost 50% of the U.S. population only have a cell phone. And the people that go and choose to have a cell phone is not a bias, it's not a random sample of the population, it's a very biased population. So this has created some problems. On top of this, we actually have over, today, we also have over 75% of the people in the U.S. that have a smartphone, and we also expect this number to continue going up in the next few years. So the objective of the work that we did was to develop a mobile application and mobile app to be able to run surveys on this app. And the task that we were asked to do was this need to be rapid, valid, and also low burden. Our first task was to choose, like, we need to develop a smartphone app. Where should we develop it? And so we analyze the smartphone penetration today. Roughly 98.6% of the market is covered between iOS devices that are iPhones and Android devices, basically. So we choose to develop an application for these two platforms. So what did we do? So we partnered with OneTree.com, that is a technology firm, to develop actually four different smartphone apps. And the reason why we have four is we have two for Android and two for iOS. And the reason why we have two for each is because we wanted to run a randomized control experiment on a gamified version. So we wanted to have a survey app and also a gamified survey app to compare both, basically. And that's why we had to develop four applications. The first task that we had was to develop all the wireframes, to develop what is called the UI/UX, the user interface. And so we work again with the firm, and we came up with some ideas on how the application would work and before we started implementing. In parallel to this, we actually also started developing the branding, and this included name creation, the logo, and the brand guidelines to actually develop the app and everything related to the app. So for the app itself, we actually decided to use the native programming language of each platform. And there is a little more cost for doing this because there are platforms out there where you can develop an app that will work in both Android and iOS at the same time without having the cost of developing two different apps. But the problem with that is that you don't have full access of all the capacity of the phone. So that's why we decided to actually develop native apps. For doing this, we actually use Swift for iOS and Android Studio for Android devices. For the backend, so these are the apps itself, and the apps will send all the information to the backend. For the backend, we use Medavol. Medavol is a solution, is a platform that is used for surveys, that is also HIPAA compliant and allows via API. So you can connect these apps to the server, and so the application would download the actual survey, would complete it, and send all the information back to the server. This is basically how it works. After we had everything ready, we had to test it. So we recruited a few testers, and we use a very very good application called Loopback.io that allows you to understand exactly how are the users interacting, how are these testers interacting with your app, to make sure that people understood, like, how the survey app works. You know what they're clicking, you know what their faces and expressions, like if they understand or not, how is the app working. So this is very useful, and all the feedback from this was also integrated later on the app itself to make sure that we cover everything. an important part of the things that we developed was a dashboard, and the dashboard allows the administrator to know. Well, as soon as you deploy a survey, you need to understand who's responding to the survey, like if people are not responding, which of the channels is working. So we have actually a real-time information allowing us to understand exactly who's answering and when. Another thing that we had to develop was a landing website. And the reason we had to develop this landing website is because we wanted to run this experiment. And if you publish an app to a store, Apple Store and Android Store will not allow you to actually run a randomized control experiment there. So we have to send traffic to this landing website, and as soon as the user click on iOS or Android, we will randomize these users and send them either to the gamified app or to the non-gamified app. And here's basically an example of the gamified app. The gamified app was exactly the same as the other survey, but actually had you can actually earn points and get badges similar to other applications in the web. So I'm going to be talking about some of the challenges that we had. The first challenge was that when we were developing this application, Apple released a new version of the operating system, iOS 10. And also at the same time, Medeval, that is our backend, also published a new backend. So we had to go and retest everything again, make some changes, make sure that everything was working for iOS 9 and iOS 10. So these are some of the complications that we had. One of the biggest challenges we had is like, as soon as you develop an app, it's not enough. You need to go, in order for the app to be useful, you need to publish it into the store so people are allowed to download it. And of course, as part of this, it requires Apple, in the case of Apple Store, to approve that application. The first time that we submitted the application, Apple rejected it. Said that, well, they didn't see a lot of, they didn't understand exactly what was the app about. So we had to work with, and thanks to Medeval, they did some connections. We had to work with Apple to make sure that they understood the purpose of this app. But these are some of the complications that we had. Another important challenge we had was the fact that you can have telemetry and you know exactly how many people download your app, but you don't know how many people out there have the app, because you don't know if someone download the app, install it, and then delete it from the smartphone. You don't know about that. Neither in Android nor iOS, you don't have telemetry on knowing which of these users deleted the app, and this makes some complications because you don't know how many people you have in your panel. Another of the challenge and lesson learned was the fact that everybody had the app, so we would push the surveys to the users. And this works like WhatsApp, meaning that you push a notification to the user, there is something that tells you, hey, you have a new survey. But of course, in the case of WhatsApp, people are expected, like they know how WhatsApp works. They know that every time there's a message, they have to click and read it. In a new app, they don't know how this works. So the problem is that many people, we would push the notification to these users, and people were not aware. The lesson here is that when you're doing that and you're pushing information to these users, service to these users, you need to have multi-channels. Like you cannot rely just on push notifications. You need to be able to send emails through Facebook or through SMS. You need to have an ability to have multi-channels. We actually did this on email and worked very well. But the lesson here is that you cannot just rely on a single channel. A very good thing about using and developing apps, running surveys on an app, is the fact that we can collect much more information than the typical information that you collect in a survey. One of them is, like, you know exactly when the users are reading the information, are doing the survey. So here, like as part of paradata analysis, basically, we know exactly when these users finish the survey or actually work on the survey. So we can track this over time. You also know as soon as they open this, like all the information in the app itself is instrumented. So you know when they open the app, you know how much time takes them to finish the survey. In the case, this is the distribution of the first survey, where 90% of the users completed the survey in less than 5 minutes. We actually sent three surveys. Survey number two and survey number three were smaller, and they were completed in less than a minute. So you know exactly how users are interacting with the survey. You also know, these are the three surveys that we send. You also know, like, when are people responding to the survey? And if they do it through the weekends, on weekends, or weekdays, at what time they answer or they prefer. So you also learn a lot about how people interact with the survey. But one of the most important things that we collect having an app is the fact that we collect geo data. We know, based on the GPS location of the phone, we know where they are when they're answering the survey. And this is very powerful. In this particular case, you see a map. We run this in Vermont, and the three clusters of data there are the three universities where we run the surveys. And it's actually quite useful to understand how this information gets collected. But we also had some lessons learned from the collecting geodata. there was a lot of people, like not a lot, but four or five people that answered the survey that they were in Kansas, all at the same point. So we wanted to understand what was this point. And this is exactly the center of the U.S. And the reason this happens is because your smartphone tries to infer the location. But if you are in this building, for example, you cannot connect to satellites. At that point, your smartphone will try to infer the location based on your IP address. So many times it will put you in the center of your city. Sometimes if it doesn't know the city, it will put you in the center of the state. But if there's nothing else, it will put you in the center of your country. In this particular case, the center of the U.S. This looks funny, but actually it's quite perturbing because there is a farm that lives in the center of the U.S. This is a 240 acres farm, and throughout the years it has been very problematic for them because they have FBI agents, federal marshals, IRS collectors. It's actually quite amazing how people rely on this geodata, but they don't understand that a lot of times this geodata is not accurate. So the lesson here is important to understand that geodata, how this geodata is inferred, because otherwise you can make mistakes like these poor guys have been suffering them. Let me show you so this is real time, not like in fast pace, how people were answering the survey. And at the first, you see a lot of points that are blue, is like majority of the people answering. And suddenly, if you see, let me pull back. If you see, suddenly there's an explosion of orange points. And these explosion of orange points happened through Thanksgiving. So people went to their families and filled the survey in a different location. That's why you suddenly see many more other locations. This is what we call the Thanksgiving effect. But it provides you, yeah, so basically this is the story of the pre and during Thanksgiving, where you see the, like, suddenly everybody's answering from their houses, basically, or from their family houses. But provides you the, like, a very, like, it shows the power of tracking these users through the geodata. Another very good thing of collecting this data in an app is that all the data, including the non-structured data, like the text that people fill, is now stored in databases. And what we did after that was running text mining. This is topic modeling, where you take all these unstructured data, you run a machine learning algorithms, and the machine learning algorithm will identify different topics automatically without human intervention. In this particular case, it wasn't that useful because you could have read, like we have 500 responses, so you could have read the 500 responses. But in the case of you have 10,000 or 100,000 responses, doing text mining on top of unstructured data is actually quite useful. The last thing that we wanted to cover was, as part of this app, was differential privacy. I'm going to explain exactly, like, a little bit of what is differential privacy. So for many of the data sources that we collect, for example, census or majority of the data, especially in your field, I'm a computer scientist. I don't work in health other than helping in some cases. But majority of the data we collect in health, for example, you need, there's a legal mandate for privacy. And there's clear value for society to analyze this data, but the question is how can we analyze this data while preserving privacy? And this has been more than a 50-year-old question. Usually there's two common solutions to this problem. You either de-anonymize the data where you remove all the PII data from the data source, or you just release statistics. This is problematic, and I'm going to show you some examples of this, because there's something called the fundamental law of information restrictions, where overly accurate information of too many statistics is non-private. And this happened actually in Massachusetts. In 1997, Massachusetts began making health records for state employees available for medical researchers. And the government removed names, addresses, social security numbers. William Weld was the governor at that point, assured that the public identifying the individual's patient would be impossible. So they only released SIP, date of birth, sex, diagnosis, and procedure. Now, this issue is supposed to be private. Latanya Sweeney, that at that point was an MIT, paid $20 and bought the board registration for Cambridge, where they have name, party, SIP code, date of birth, and sex. And William Weld lived in Cambridge, so he's a boarder. There's six people in Borders share the exact date of birth. Only three of them were men, but Will was the only one on the SIP. So Sweeney learned Will medical records, and this made the press all, like, it was all over the press, basically. Like, And the problem with this is again, the people don't need to realize that as soon as you release statistics, even if this information doesn't have any PII data, people can reconstruct data. This also happened to, in many other cases, AOL also released something similar, and they also have a problem. Netflix also released as part of the Netflix competition. So this has happened many, many times. Cynthia Dorck, there is a researcher for Microsoft Research, introduced something called differential privacy in 2005. And the idea of differential privacy is to introduce noise to the data that is collected in order to make sure that we provide mathematical guarantees that people will not be able to do this type of attacks, basically. And as part of the app, we are developing a prototype to integrate on the smartphone an app that will be able to send the information with differential privacy. So you still have the signal, but you don't, you're not worried about the privacy of the users. Like they will not be able to do this type of attacks. So the results, as an overall of the pilot has been great, and we're very happy so far on this. We believe that information, like all the information that we collect from Paradata, and especially the geodata, will allow you to do many, many very good applications of surveys. And this also allows you to do something like very fast, either in the US or even worldwide. Like as long as you can distribute this application, people will be able to fill the survey, and this is important. And last but not least, leveraging differential privacy apps also allows you to collect a lot of data in a privacy-preserving way. So we expect that in the next few years, many more applications will be using differential privacy, especially in health, with healthcare data. Thank you very much. Yes.
Question is, you had talked about the two different versions that you prepared for both the iOS and other. Have you noticed any different response to the gamified versus the more standard version?
There was a small difference, but it was not that sick. So I think that the problem is that we didn't have a lot of statistical power to measure difference between those. Of course, we were expecting to have a huge difference so we could actually measure it. I think that the lesson here is that there was not a lot of, other than the fact that there was gamified, there was not a huge amount of incentives other than just people collecting points. And a lot of people, the feedback that we got from a lot of people is like, well, we were collecting points, but we didn't know why, correct? So again, we wanted to test this. I think there is value in gamified versions, right? In this one, it's not stat sig, but we think that there is probably in the next few versions, we could actually have something that is more relevant for the users, yes.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.